Hey, fellow romance readers, I'm Amy.
And I'm Sarah, and this is Post-Book Depression. You know that feeling you get when you finish a good book that you didn't want to end?
Have you finished a book and just weren't ready to move on from the story and its beloved characters? You find yourself needing just a little more? Well, this multi-trope romance podcast gives you the opportunity to dig deeper with us into books we love as we discuss all the reasons we can't move on.
Feeling chatty? You can continue the conversation with us on Instagram at Post Book Depression Podcast or on Facebook in our Post Book Depression discussion group.
We would love for you to subscribe to our podcast and take a brief moment to leave a review.
Are you ready? Let's discuss.
Welcome to the show, everyone. Today we're going to discuss The Dead Romantics by Ashley Poston. The first few minutes, we're going to do a brief review of the story without any spoilers, and then we are going to be shifting into that deeper book discussion, which, as always, is going to include lots of spoilers. We are going to let you know, of course, before we start the discussion portion. The Dead Romantics is a story about a ghostwriter author named Florence, who is a year post-breakup and has lost her faith in love. When her father, who's an undertaker, passes away, she's forced to go home after being away for a decade to help deal with her father's funeral arrangements. Like her dad, Florence has the gift of seeing ghostly spirits who need help moving on. One ghost in particular, who connects himself to her, works to restore her faith in love. Sarah, what did you think of The Dead Romantics?
Amy, I loved the story so much. It was so delightful. The entire time I was reading, I had the biggest smile on my face. I love how heartwarming it was. I love that she is a ghostwriter. I love anything that has to do with books. I love the family dynamics in this story. I just could not stop smiling. It was exactly what I needed. I wasn't quite ready for Halloween to be over, and this book kind of carried over into the beginning of November. It gives you a little bit of the ghosty Halloween vibes, and it was just so endearing and sweet.
I thought this was a cute story with humor, and even though the main character is dealing with the passing of her father, it felt like a fun, lighthearted read. I enjoyed the chemistry of the two characters and thought that this made a really great fall read. I agree with all the things you said. All right, moving into our ratings. Angst, gritting teeth emojis.
I gave it a 0.25. It wasn't super angsty for me as far as some of the other things that we've read. You're looking like maybe that's not the right
you
rating.
You can rate it however you want. I was a little higher. Continue on your thought pattern.
It wasn't super angsty to me. I mean, there were things that I kind of wondered, but I wasn't nervous. I kind of associate like angst as like nervous. Like
that's a good point. That's a good point. I gave it 1.5 out of 5. Really towards the end is where the angst was for me, and I don't want to delve into that right now just because it will give away some spoilers, but there were some things in the story that did cause me a little bit of angst.
Okay.
So that's why I gave it 1.5. Humor, laughing emojis.
I gave it a 3. I laughed throughout this whole thing. There were some moments that were more serious, kind of sad. You know, the storyline, what she's dealing with and going through, it's sad, it's emotional. But it was so lighthearted, too, to be going through this grief that the family goes through. It didn't feel heavy. And I just kept smiling throughout and chuckling.
I agree with you. I did 2 out of 5. I found quite a few parts of the dialogue to be funny. I had a lot of LOL moments myself. And like you, I was smiling through the whole thing. So I found it to be a really good lighthearted read as well. Spiciness.
Spicy. I gave it a 1.5, kind of high, but not because there's so much throughout, there's not, but the one scene, there's one in particular scene, the way it's written, it was just steamy filling. I don't know. I just was like, okay.
Maybe some of that chemistry. I gave it 0.5. This was a very slow burn. And there are 0 on-screen scenes.
Yes, that is true.
So maybe
but they
the
kind
chemistry.
Of paint the picture.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, so like the tension, maybe. I don't know. Now that I think about it, it's probably too high. Okay, I'll dial it down to a 1, but that's as far as I dare go.
I love it. All right, tears, crying emojis.
I gave it a 1.25.
Okay, I did 1.5.
I guess I should switch my tears and my spice.
Maybe so.
So yeah, it was sad, but the author just wrote it so well that it felt more joyful.
Yeah, it wasn't heavy. There were moments when it pulled at my heartstrings, mm-hmm. especially towards the end of the book. But sure. overall, it was definitely more comical than sad. Okay, overall, how many stars?
I gave it a 4.25.
I did 4.
You did?
Yeah, it's a great rom-com. I loved the supernatural components that were sprinkled in as well. It just made me feel good to read it.
It made me feel so good. I was so happy reading this story. I really enjoyed it. There was so many great aspects to it.
I agree. Well, that concludes the spoiler-free quick review of this story. Now we're going to shift into the deeper discussion portion, which is going to include plenty of spoilers. So if you haven't read this story, go check it out, come back and listen to our discussion, and then let us know your thoughts on the story. You can always find us on Instagram at Postbook Depression Podcast, or on Facebook in our Postbook Depression Discussion Group. You can also email us at postbookdepressionpodcast@gmail.com. We're kicking off the discussion of the Dead Romantics. Let's get into it, Sarah, shall we?
Let's do it.
Let's start off this topic with ghostwriters, because that's essentially her role here, prominent role. And I found ghostwriting to be so fascinating.
Oh, me too. I love hearing when you find out that somebody is a ghostwriter for somebody, which you don't typically find that out.
No, you don't.
Have you ever read a book where you found out somebody was a ghostwriter?
No, and I was so puzzled by the idea of a ghostwriter. I was really curious why someone would want to do that for no credit at all, other than just the paycheck. You're looking at me like I should not be surprised by that. Tell me what you're feeling right now.
Well, I can think of a lot of reasons that you would want to be a ghostwriter. Okay, well, for one, if you wrote for a specific genre and you are kind of tied to that genre, they don't want to try to sell you as anything else. So if you had the opportunity to go write, let's say you write in romance, mm-hmm. but you really want to write a horror story and your publisher won't let you or whatever, you could go ghostwrite for somebody doing horror story.
Or but don't they just like do a different pen name?
You could, but, you know, maybe that. Or for somebody who just doesn't want all the fame that is attached, they don't want to do the book signings. They just love to write. They love to express. They love to create, but they don't want the credit. And I could see that. And also you're kind of teaming up with somebody who's really well known. Typically, mm-hmm. I think, for the most part. I mean, that's kind of like an honor, because while that person is getting all the credits, you know.
You did all the work.
You did the work, but you also kind of, I feel like you kind of have to be in tune with what that author is about. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I find it fascinating. I get why somebody would want to. Yeah, I could see the appeal.
I struggled with it for a bit.
Okay.
Mostly because I just really struggled with the why. Why someone would want to do that. I get the side of it, the side of things where they don't want the fame or the attention that goes along with that. But then that was what led me to, well, why wouldn't they just write under a pen name? But do you think books by ghostwriters are as important to authors' legacies, like for this story as an example?
Yes, I think so. Because I feel like as an author, for whatever reason you may choose to take on a ghostwriter, first of all, you have to completely trust that that person is going to honor what you've created, mm-hmm. that they're going to be really joining you, being united, as in this is kind of the goal that we have. And there has to be a lot of unity in that, I feel like.
Sure.
So to be able to trust somebody that completely to carry out your work, I think is a huge deal, and what an honor to be able to have the opportunity to write for somebody like that. So I think it's, you have to have a lot of trust both ways.
Sure. I found Florence's story interesting in that she had all the NDAs that she had to sign. So nobody could really know that she was a ghostwriter or who she ghostwrote for.
Right.
So I found that part to be very fascinating.
That she had to sign an NDA?
No, just that all of the people that were close to her in her life could never know.
Yeah, that would be hard. But I also feel like her circumstances were completely different. See, she had to go into ghostwriting because her first book, essentially, she considers it a failure. I think for the fact that you were simply published was a huge accomplishment. Absolutely. And you should be proud.
Yeah.
So, because that's how many authors are out there. It's the dream. Of course, now publishing is so different from... I mean, I see on social media platforms all the time, people self-publish. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Her circumstances were kind of heartbreaking, in my opinion, because I don't think that it was that she wanted to be a ghostwriter. I think that was kind of obvious.
Yeah, I
think she wanted her own words, but they were still her words. She was inspired by Anne. You know, it wasn't until she was kind of like, romance is dead, that she was no longer on the same page as Anne. I see the appeal, but her circumstances, I think, were just a little different.
I agree. So let's shift into her first meeting with Ben.
Mm-hmm.
He is the editor for Anne's books. I found that whole scene to be very awkward and funny.
Oh, I love that scene so much. When she walks in there with a cactus and she's describing her whole wardrobe, like when she's like, what is it, day four hair? Her hair is kind of a mess and she's like, she wears clothes for comfort, not fashion. So I can totally picture this chick. I loved her. I loved her personality. She was so funny, how she was gripping and then she couldn't find anywhere to look on the walls. She's like, it's so clean in here. Like, it was so funny to me, but I loved it. So I love the scene where she's thinking to herself, I want to climb him like a tree. She's like, no, bad influence. Bad. Like, can't do that.
I also loved later in the story, thinking back to that scene when we find out that he was attracted to her as well. And maybe what he was thinking in those moments as well.
I know. Well, and he was thinking, she completely hates me because she won't make eye contact with me. Like, she's really fascinated with this cactus. Like, it's so funny. I loved that scene. I love awkward moments in books. I hate them, but I love them.
Right.
Like, I cringe. I'm like, oh.
But they're so delicious.
Yeah, they're so delicious, like, secondhand embarrassment. I hate those, but yeah, I loved her meeting with him. I thought it was interesting when she is trying to ask for the extension, and he just shoots her down.
Yeah.
It was so funny, because you could see, like, the shift on his face. He was all, you know, open, and he thought she was funny, and then he's like, no.
Especially knowing that he knows she's the ghostwriter for
Anne. Oh my goodness. So that made that so much better when we find out later on that he knew. Because she was thinking, did she not tell him that I ghostwrite for Anne?
It made it more awkward for her not knowing.
Why wouldn't he say anything?
I found it funny that he didn't.
It's like she's had a year, hasn't she? So the fact that he knew all that was just so funny. Yeah, it makes it even more funny later on.
I think so, too. She eventually ends up at the poetry reading. Her friend Rose takes her to this poetry reading, and this is where we get introduced to Lee, her ex-boyfriend, in some pretty great detail.
Mm-hmm.
It was really awkward in the moment when they both raised their hand and walked up to read, and then when she has her moment where she steps out and is freaking out. But in that time, she does a little time jump back, and we get the story of why they broke up. Let's spend some time talking about their relationship and breakup.
Yeah.
Ultimately, what led to their breakup, I really liked Lee in the first part of her descriptor of him and how sweet he was to her and caring for her. And then it's not until we really discover what he's done. Essentially, he's taken her life, the fact that she can see ghosts, and written her story, basically, mm-hmm. without her permission.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, that's gutsy. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
Because I don't know how I would feel about all that. But when we kind of get the backstory of why they broke up, because I kept wondering, what happened? What happened? What mm-hmm. happened? And when you find out they were together for 3 years, that's a really long time
to
be together with somebody. And for him to do what he did, I don't know. My heart was so broken for her because it just kind of felt like
a slap in the face.
Well, more than a slap in the face. Was this ever real? You know, and then you kind of find out that he's lied about other things. He says all these things about his personal life and his mm-hmm. family, and none of it's really true. He just kind of creates this persona that I guess he wants people to believe is true. I don't know.
So I kind of am getting a certain perspective of yours just on what you've said. But do you think at any point at all that Lee was justified in what he did? In the sense that, do you think original ideas exist? Or are we just kind of a byproduct of the things that inspire us around us?
I do not feel like he was justified in what he did. And here's the reason why. Because he did not communicate with her about it. He went behind her back, and the way he responded when she confronted him. He also took her stories without permission and twisted them to make the characters not how she explained her family to be.
Mm-hmm.
And I do not think that that's okay. That's not inspiration.
I agree.
I don't feel like what he did was inspiration. I feel like he realized that this could make a good story, she's never going to use this.
And then manipulated things.
And he manipulated things to work for, because, well, first of all, he didn't believe her.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he was kind of like, oh, you're weird. So basically, she's telling him all these things.
In a vulnerable space.
Right. I don't know. He kind of makes fun of it almost in a way. It's not how she described it to be. So, no. Do I think that there are original ideas? Yes. Do I feel like you could argue with every single story that's out there? Well, so-and-so had that idea, or I had that idea. Let's be real. There's a lot of stuff happens out there. So is it for me to say that there's no original idea left out there? No. I think somebody's got one. But I do feel like we can draw inspiration, but it's all in a way that you do it. You can't just blatantly steal somebody's story. He stole
her
story.
That's where my beef fell with him, is that he did it behind her back. He didn't communicate, like you said. And then he essentially stole it from her and then didn't talk about it, didn't give her an opportunity to write her own story, basically.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I just kind of feel like with that, it's not like, okay, so we read romance genre and we know that there's like the grumpy sunshine and there's, you know, the age gap trope, and there's all these little different tropes.
Mm-hmm.
If you start reading all the different age gap tropes, you're going to see a lot of common things happening. There's going to be a lot of similarities, but that's not to say that the person that wrote each of those stories doesn't have an original idea.
Absolutely. So, I agree.
Anyway, yeah.
We're at the poetry reading out back. She stormed out after seeing Lee there, and Ben is there as well, which I loved that scene too. Oh, he kisses her. Oh,
I
know.
Well, she kissed him first, and then he kisses her back. I loved it so much. And then when later on in the story, I thought, are we not going to talk about that alley scene? Like, we just keep talking about when they met, but I'm like, are we not going to talk about the alley scene? Like, did that not happen?
Right.
Let's discuss that.
So it was really unfortunate that right after that, she gets the call from her mom that her dad has passed away.
So sad.
That was super sad. And it essentially sends her back home. She's been away for over a decade, and she's having to go back to her hometown and help with her father's arrangements. Let's kick it off with the scene where they're reading the will.
Okay.
And his dad's very specific demands.
Yes.
Or requests, I guess.
I love these so much when the explanation is given at the end.
Oh, me too, and how it ties all together.
It's so perfect.
So we have 1,000 wildflowers,
mm-hmm.
Elvis performing at his funeral, the murder of crows, and unlimited party providing the decorations.
Yes.
I'm kind of curious because the family doesn't really offer much help to Florence when they're dividing these things up. They're all realizing that these are absurd requests, basically. And she takes it on herself to do all of these.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the frustration that I had with her is that she felt like she had to do everything alone.
Yeah, well, I think she felt like she was trying to be helpful because they had those two other funerals that they had to get done. Her brother had to work. He was helping with the funerals in some respects. And so I think that she just wanted to be helpful. I didn't take it when it was first being laid out. I did not take that as in she's taking this all on by herself because she's the only one that can get it done.
I didn't initially either until later on when she's actually doing this.
Yeah,
things.
And yes. And then I kind of thought that too. But I thought at the same time, everybody's busy.
But they were also shutting her out of decisions. There were several times when they were talking about things where she would come into conversations that had clearly been ongoing.
Mm-hmm.
And she felt secluded. And I realized that they did that because she's been gone for 10 years and they didn't feel like she wanted to be a part of that. But I could just really feel the separation between her and her family.
I didn't feel so much the separation until, like, I thought, I loved their, I have to say, I loved them as a family because I do feel like there was genuine love there. Now, I do feel like her and her sister were kind of button heads a little bit, but I kind of took that as in they were super close and her younger sister was just upset when she left.
Mm-hmm.
So I knew that that was going to kind of sort itself out, but I did feel a little taken back when she shows up. And they had already been meeting about something, and she wasn't included in the conversation.
Me too.
And then when it continued to happen, I was confused by that. But when her brother, Carver, says, well, we didn't think that you would want to be a part of it. So when he explained it, it made sense to me.
Yeah. It took until that time, though, for me to not feel so slighted on her behalf.
Yeah, I agree. Same for me, because I did when she was kind of feeling that. I was like, oh, why are they doing that? That's weird.
Yeah. The wild things that he's asking her to do, the 1,000 wildflowers. Can you imagine
a 1,000 wildflowers? Oh, so beautiful.
That's so many flowers.
It's so many flowers, but it's so stunning.
I know.
I just envision that in my mind, and I, beautiful.
All the bright colors.
The bright colors, and they separate it by colors, so I could totally picture that, and I thought, I wonder if I can request that, and if if my family will honor that, or they'll be like, what? Nobody's going to have 1,000 wildflowers, you psycho lady.
I like how her journey to find Elvis led her to something that her dad enjoyed doing on a regular basis.
I know. But why Elvis at your funeral? It's so strange.
It is strange.
But it's sweet because it was endearing. You know, it's sweet. I like those kind of, you know, quirky things that people
means
do.
Something in
yes, that means something to somebody that if you walked up, you'd be like, what's happening? But to the family, I don't know. It was sweet.
I wanted to ask you about the murder of crows because it seems to me that every time the murder of crows appears in the story, Ben is there.
Right.
So did you ever think that maybe her dad knew about Ben or had some kind of inclination that there would be some ties there?
No, I don't think so at all. I think it was because he knew that there's always a ghost hanging around.
And so you think the crows are tied to the ghost, just ghosts in general?
Well, they typically are. That's how I took it. Is that not how you took it?
Because I just kept focusing on it being with Ben.
Oh, well, I took it as in that he said, remember when you see a murder of crows because there's always people to be helped and there's ghosts. So I took it as in every single time.
I like that.
Well, because when she was younger, there was always crows around.
Mm-hmm.
Like she kind of hates them.
Yeah.
Because it means somebody. So I thought the crows were there because of ghosts.
No, you're right.
Okay.
Now that we're talking through it, when I was reading it, I was so focused on, because she pointedly says every time the crows,
right,
Ben is there hand in hand.
Well, see, I was sitting there reading it saying to myself, you foolish girl, you have the crows locked down, just have Ben at the funeral. So when her brother like has his bird cage, I'm like, seriously, guys, why is nobody picking up that the crows are there because Ben is there? Just have Ben come to the funeral, they're gonna be there.
I love that.
Like, it's locked down, okay? Move on. Find your wildflowers, lady. Jeez.
That makes sense. How much did you love the unlimited party decor?
Oh, Amy.
Happy death day.
Okay. Well, I can understand the daughter's frustration with that, but I loved his meaning behind it. That this is for every party I will not be at. This is for every birthday I'll miss. Oh, I cried. I teared up. Not cried. But I teared up. It was an emotional week, listeners. Okay? So I teared up. Because don't we feel that way? Isn't that why death is so unnerving to us? For some who just, you know, even if you're not afraid to die, you think,
I'll never get this again.
I'll never get this. I'm going to miss this. Or if we lose somebody close to us, we think, they're not here for this birthday. They're not here for the celebration. So I really got choked up when I read that because I thought he's trying to make a joyful moment out of something that's hard and reminding them, hey, every birthday I'm there. This is a representation of I'm still with you.
It really was a special moment.
It was so beautiful. Listen, I gotta tell you, as absurd as this list is, minus Elvis. No Elvis at my funeral. I love his music, but I don't want somebody impersonating him at my funeral. But I really loved this funeral.
And it was very well thought out.
It was so thought out.
And he had his family in mind with each and every single one of these items that he wanted represented there. And that just made it so special for me.
And then the letter that he has her read, but he doesn't tell her, and it's for the family.
Yeah.
It's for each of them. It was so beautiful.
Love how it tied all together.
I love when you go to a funeral. It doesn't happen very often, but when you go to a funeral and you leave and you just, it really was a celebration of life.
Mm-hmm.
Not that you're not grieving of what you've lost. I've only been to three of those. And you walk out and you think, should I be filling this hobby?
Mm-hmm.
I like that because it's such a testament to that person.
Absolutely.
And what they meant to people, and that they can bring joy in such a hard time. I don't know. I just loved it. Okay. Emotional week, listeners. Okay. Moving on. Let's go on. Because I could boohoo about that all day long.
We've been focusing on the funeral, but I want to back up a bit into early on in the story when they finished reading the will. We know that her dad sees ghosts. She sees ghosts. This is mm-hmm. something that they share in common. And after the reading of the will, when she steps outside and she sees Ben as a ghost, I gasped out loud.
I did too. Amy, I was freaking smooth out. I thought to myself, no. Mm-hmm. Is this not a romance novel?
I know. How is this going to work if he's dead?
Same. Yes. But you were a little bit ahead of me on reading this. And so you said, it reminds me of a movie, but I don't want to tell you because it will spoil it. And I said, it's just like Heaven with Reese Witherspoon and Mark Ruffalo, isn't it? And you didn't say anything. No, and then when I started reading it, I said, as soon as that came on, I said, he's not dead. He's in a coma.
Uh-huh.
It's just like Heaven with Reese Witherspoon and Mark Ruffalo. And I was like, isn't it?
Especially when he was making comments about how he doesn't feel dead. He doesn't feel like he's dead.
Yeah.
And then he would come and go.
Yeah.
I kind of was really suspecting that either he was being pulled back out of the coma or the deep sleep. And then, I definitely felt the Just Like Heaven vibes.
Yeah.
I love that movie.
I wonder if I would have caught on to that if you hadn't said anything.
I hate that I said anything now.
But isn't it crazy that that was the movie that came to my mind? Oh, yes. I love it. Anyway.
When he's a ghost and they're spending time together, I really love how supportive Ben is and how much he encourages her. He talks about how great of an author she is. I mean, he read her first book.
Oh, did you not love that moment?
I loved it. Oh,
my heart was so, we're just gushing. So great. I love it. It was such a great moment because she had felt like such a failure with that.
Mm-hmm.
That is why I loved it so much for her. Because how many times did she say, or not say, but think, I failed. I'm a failure. I failed. So when he says he had read it and how much it meant to him, it made me so happy for her. I felt like she needed that.
I agree.
You know, because she was kind of hiding behind somebody else's name.
Mm-hmm.
She was still writing. She was still doing what she loved. She wasn't loving it at the moment. But she didn't feel like she could be out on her own anymore.
Yeah.
So when he kind of validates, hey, you're incredible. Your book stayed with me. I found it so endearing. It was such a beautiful moment that he shared that with her and kind of, I don't know, renewed her confidence, mm-hmm. I think, a little bit in
Built
herself.
Her up. Yeah.
Not in her ghostwriting. Maybe in her ghostwriting, but in herself.
Yeah. I absolutely agree. And I also, in reciprocating that, when he opens up to her about being engaged with Laura and him thinking that it's his fault that she cheated, I like that they took those moments together to encourage one another and build each other up and kind of opening the eyes of each other. It's not about me. It was about their choices and things like that. And I really appreciated that they did that together.
I did too.
One frustration that I did have with Florence, every time things got vulnerable or sensitive between the two, she always found an excuse to run away.
Yeah.
Every time. And I just, I would like at my book every time because it frustrated me.
I see what you're saying. And I understand that frustration. But she kept reminding herself he's dead.
That's true, but still.
Yeah, but she had so much pain from that loss when she was young. Because it was the boy that she helped solve the murder for.
Mm-hmm.
And we come to find out that she liked him. So I could understand her trying to protect herself from that. Not wanting to get close to him. Amy, let's be real. If this was real life.
I know.
Kind of like an awkward situation to fall in love with a ghost. You know what I'm saying? So it's self-preservation, man.
Yeah,
you know what I'm
right.
saying?
I hear you. In one of those vulnerable moments, he does open up to the fact that he saw her before Lee did.
Oh.
What do you think about that scene?
Well, I was blown away that he described what she was wearing.
Right? Very detailed.
The shoes.
His memory.
Yeah. You could tell, like, this guy has it bad, you know? But he says, you know, I am, what was it? Something monogamous, torturously monogamous or something like that. So, because he had already met Laura whenever he saw her.
That's right.
So it kind of, in a way,
worked itself out.
It worked itself out because I don't think we would like Ben as much if he was with somebody else and then went after Florence.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that makes him so endearing is his commitment and his character. But I was surprised by it.
So was I.
I was really surprised and I love that he pointed it out to her. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a...
Nothing can be done about it now.
Yeah.
The big bomb that was dropped that Anne Nichols is Ben's grandma. Were you caught off guard by that?
I picked up on it because he kept calling her Annie and it felt very personal that he knew her. And I had a feeling that it was not going to be on a professional level. And we already knew the history that his grandmother was the one who adopted him when he lost his parents. So when she makes note of it in her mind that he keeps referencing her as Annie, I realized, oh, that's going to be his grandma. So
I'm proud of you because I definitely did not pick up on that. And I found it extremely hilarious when she realizes she took the job from a ghost.
Oh, okay. Now that I did not know was going to happen until he says, when she says like 5.5 years ago or something, he's like, but, and then he doesn't finish the thought. And I thought to myself, what were you going to say, sir? You need to tell us, share with the class. When she is describing that and we realize that Anne had already passed, I found it so comical. And she goes, only I would accept a job from a ghost.
Yes.
It was so funny. It just, this
There were
book.
So many funny moments.
There were a lot of funny moments in this book. I enjoyed it.
We're coming to the point in the story where Ben's ghost leaves. And we discover that he is indeed in the hospital. And he's coming out of a coma. And this is where the angst was really amped up for me. Because you're not sure... Is he going to remember? I mean, as a reader, you expect that he will. But living through the time, because there's a time jump. Months pass.
3, and then it went to 4 months.
Eight. I know.
It was like the worst for me.
So this is angst. Like, come on.
Okay, I take it back. Right now, I'm changing my angst rating. Because I'm changing it to a 1. Because when I saw 3 months and then 4, because it goes to July. Oh. If she might as well have said 6 years has passed, because that's what it felt like to me.
Yes.
I thought, why have you not called?
Yeah, I was proud of her for finally just getting herself together and going to his office and deciding if he remembers me, he does. If not, okay, we'll end this relationship, professional relationship.
Okay, well, before we go to that, can we just back up to that delicious moment where, and I am not one for violence, I do not condone it.
When she finds Lee.
But I am condoning it in this moment when she punches Lee in the face.
Yes.
Well, first of all, my heart dropped when she sees him. And then it nosedived when he said she's been by his side since it happened.
Laura.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And she hears Ben laugh. Oh, so sad.
That was terrible, wasn't it?
Yes. And so I was just, the internal struggle. It was so sad. Okay, yeah, definitely a 1 on the angst. Okay. When she had that opportunity to just unleash on Lee, it was just...
It was very liberating.
Oh, it was liberating. It was beautiful. And I love when he was shouting at her about pressing charges and she kept walking. I don't care.
I love
just
that
just kept
moment.
Going. It was the best. He deserved it, people.
He
okay?
did deserve it.
I'm not one for going and throwing punches. I'm kind of a pansy. But in that moment, Florence deserved that moment.
Yes, she did.
She was justified.
She goes to Ben's office with the decision, either he's going to remember me or he doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
And it was even angsty a bit sitting through that meeting because he doesn't give any inclination that he knows her at all.
Do you know what I was waiting for?
Tell me.
I was waiting for him to pull that moment where he would shut the door and ask to kiss her.
Yes.
That's what I thought was going to happen.
Uh-huh.
And I really thought that the author had a beautiful moment to take it there because he said, I wish that's what I would have done when
yes.
he was Ghost Ben. And when he didn't, I was kind of bummed.
Yeah.
Because I wanted that moment.
It was set up beautifully for that.
It really was. Okay. Rewrite. No, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. It was still a beautiful moment.
I loved it. And then they get there happily ever after, which just warmed my heart.
I love that he asked to go back home with her. And then when he goes home and he says, "Nice to meet you," to Dana, and they're confused by that. And so Florence kind of has to, "Oh, I talked a lot about you," or something like that. I thought that that was funny.
It was the best. Yeah. This was just a fun rom-com. I just so enjoyed this story.
I did too. It was a lot of fun. It was a fun read. So thank you so much for joining us on this episode. We hope you enjoyed it as much as us and you want to continue the discussion with us. We would love to hear from you. What were your favorite parts of the story? Hit us up on Instagram at our Postbook Depression or on Facebook in our Postbook Depression podcast discussion group. You can also email us at postbookdepressionpodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, keep reading.